Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
11.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
It's not 10. You see, you're on 10 here. Where can you go from there? Where?
To 11.
11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
We started out talking baseball, just looking at how strange it is when you have pitchers working on various things in so many different ways and underthinking and overthinking and thinking properly, and then one manager telling his pitcher not to think about anything. But hey, that's the way baseball works. Jonah Carey joined us, and Andrew Zimmern joined us, and we talked about eating insects. Something that's
I'm starting to turn. I can do it
to my heart because they're yummy. They're delicious. They're nutritious.
Yeah,
and
but
they're
you
plentiful.
Admit that there's a psychological hurdle I'm going to have to clear. I'll get there. Speaking of psychological hurdles, some of the nerds, some of the smarter people in our country said goodbye to an old friend. That's a tough thing to do. You've read about the Mars Opportunity rover, correct?
Yeah,
and how we had
finally
to,
went dark.
Yeah, we said goodbye to it. This was a pretty good couple of graphs by Dan Nealon over at the AV Club. Earlier this week, news began to spread that the Mars rover Opportunity had reached the end of its robotic life, and people were understandably upset. The solar-powered rover was initially sent on a 90-day mission to the Red Planet, but managed to stay remarkably functional for nearly 15 years until a planet-wide dust storm knocked it out of commission last summer. As reported by the AP, NASA made their final attempt to contact Opportunity Tuesday night. Now tell me this doesn't pull at your heartstrings a little bit, even though it's a robot. They'd made their final attempt to contact Opportunity on Tuesday night with the transmission of Billie Holiday's I'll Be Seeing You.
Oh, wow.
I mean, these are a bunch of nerds. Like,
yeah, but they've got a relationship with this thing. It really is like a
years.
Like a
I mean, it's like a
being.
Child to them. You communicate right. with it, and you have to wait. Like, I think it's I forget if it's 8 minutes or 20 minutes
for the lag time.
Maybe it's 20 minutes for there and back, the return time. This is a hard day. Project manager Don Callis told the crowd of NASA employees gathered for the farewell transmission. Even though it's a machine and we're saying goodbye, it's still very hard and very poignant. But we had to do that. We came to that point. So they said goodbye to an old friend with some pretty, melancholy stuff. I enjoyed it. I liked it.
How many indoor publicly owned ice rinks do you think there are in the Toronto metropolitan area?
Billions.
No, seriously.
Toronto Metro. Toronto is 143.
A lot of games and not enough available goalies. It's a thing in some of these leagues.
So many pads and stuff, yeah.
Because it's hard sometimes. If a goalie's sick or if he's got to work or if she can't make it, you just need a goalie. It's a story in the New York Times. Teams can do without one of their skaters. If the goalie can't make it, a game could be forfeited, which can feel like a puck to the mouth when ice time costs more than $400 an hour.
Good God.
So enter Puck App.
Puck App.
For lack of a better term, I'd like to, as I sent this story to my kid, and he said it should be called Goober or Goalie Uber. It's an app because there are as many as 8,000 rental goalie orders every year in the Toronto area. So the app finds you a goalie. The goalie gets to the game and ends up netting on average anywhere between $35 and $60.
For the one game?
For the one game. And there are some guys who will do multiple games, but use this as a supplemental income source. And they talk to several goalies who do this, who do 10 games a week, make a little extra, give a little extra beer money here.
10 games a week?
Yeah, they talked to one who says he's made over $100,000 in 8 years as a rental goalie. Says it's not enough for a mortgage and kids' education, but it's enough to help me get by. And there are other apps. Book a Goalie, My Puck, Goalies to Go, Puck App, Rent a Goalie. And here in Chicago, we are served by something called Get a Goalie. And it's just a way that you never know. Your phone's going to buzz and say, hey, we need you over at Johnny's. We need you at MB. We need you at McFetridge. We got a game. We need a goalie.
So how does this work from a team standpoint? The group text goes around. It's like, hey, Jim's out tonight. He can't play. Everybody cool with Chip? What do you figure, like 10, 12 skaters on a team like this? Are there more? I don't even
That's
know.
That's about right. Probably 10.
I mean, everybody chips in like $3-4 to make sure that you play tonight as opposed to forfeiting the $400 for the ice time that you've already probably laid down.
Some leagues do it differently, where the league itself will have what are called league goalies, where either they're scorekeepers or somebody on call within a certain geographical area, and if you need your league goalie, I know this because one of the dads on my son's team, he plays in like a D-level league, and they needed a goalie, and they had somebody who was brought in by the league. This guy was like an A-level goalie.
Yeah.
And he's playing at this really low level of old man hockey.
Just
and
ruining people.
They asked him after the game, they said, what'd you see out there? And he said, not much.
So, yeah. So can you rate and review the goalies? Are there like 5-star ratings and stuff?
I don't
like,
know.
Oh, you can't get this guy. His glove side's terrible.
Or you give him a tip or something?
Do not hire this man. Or if you're playing against one that you've played with, you know a couple weaknesses.
I love the idea of rental goalies. I told my kid, I said, look, if you can't make it into college, you just said we'll move to Hamilton or we'll move to Toronto.
Yeah.
And you can play clarinet on the street and then you can be a rental goalie for the rest of your life. Maybe you won't go hungry.
And you'll get health care.
You can eat poutine. And you get health care.
So follow-up number one to one of my favorite stories from the Midway in the last couple of months. You remember Georgia businessman Keaton Shaw? Remember me telling you about him just a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
He was the guy accused of scamming almost a dozen people out of $750,000, promising Super Bowl tickets to people.
Right.
Well, the cops picked him up.
His own family, too, right?
His own mother gave him $36,000 or something like that for a whole bunch of Super Bowl tickets and a Super Bowl event. Sort of. It's like a real Fire Island scam. So anyway, Shaw, who's been missing since December, was finally caught last week. And rudeness might have been what did him in. Shaw was arrested last week in California and is in the process of being extradited back to Georgia per police. Remember how you and I said that he left his wife and his kids, so probably second family?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we nailed it. Shaw and a girlfriend apparently went to the spa at Pechanga Resort and Casino in Temecula, where they were rude to a 19-year-old spa concierge named David Halliday. Halliday told ABC News 10 San Diego that Shaw, being rude and demanding to cut in front of the line, tipped him off. He came in with his girlfriend, Halliday said. Just from the offset, he seemed a bit different from the usual guests we have in the spa. Halliday also found it unusual that Shaw was paying with cash. Feeling like he might have seen Shaw somewhere before, Halliday Googled his name. The cops were alerted. Shaw was arrested by Riverside County Sheriff's officers. Gwinnett County authorities announced Shaw was charged with one count felony theft by conversion. We're not aware of. Although there may be additional charges. The lesson here, don't be a jerk.
I promise you it's complete coincidence that the previous story contained somebody named Halliday. Because this story out of St. Louis, I have to keep my eyes peeled for this. The same amphibious plane landing in the Mississippi River prompted St. Louis emergency crews to respond twice this week to reports of a plane crashing in the water, but the pilot said he wasn't breaking any rules. Rick Reef, regional sales director for Icon Aviation, was the pilot of both a Wednesday afternoon flight that touched down in the river in front of the Gateway Arch and a Thursday morning flight that landed near the Chain of Rocks Bridge. Reef says he regularly gives demonstrations of the Icon A5, a small sport plane sold by his company. He said this is what this plane is supposed to do. It is supposed to fly low. It is supposed to touch down in the water. It is for adventure flying. But during both flights, worried onlookers thought the small plane was making an emergency landing, according to St. Louis Fire Department Captain Garen Mosby. On Wednesday, a report of a plane in the water prompted multiple fire and police ground crews to rush to the area, and the fire department's Marine Task Force rescue boat sent to the river to scan for signs of wreckage or victims. And Reef said he'd been in contact with the flight tower at the St. Louis downtown airport in Cahokia all through the flight, but the fire department says it was never informed a plane would be landing on the river. Talk to each other! And then on Thursday, he said he alerted St. Louis authorities that he would be flying again. And the fire department says firefighters never got the message. So a response team was sent to the Chain of Rocks Bridge in the morning when a call came in about a suspended. So he said, I think there was a miscommunication on several fronts here, but I don't think anything like this has happened before. After the second round of confusion, the pilot let the fire department know he'd be making five more flights Thursday, promised to give them warnings in the future, specifically when he'd be landing on the water. Now, here's what happened. This is 16 years after a true emergency landing on the Mississippi River. In April of 2003, two pilots and a small cargo jet ran out of fuel and landed on the river. Both survived, but it wrecked the plane. What I'm worried about now that we go through this whole thing, it's like, it's this guy again. Of course, this is when you're going to have a Cessna make an emergency landing. I was like, come on! No.
It's fine. It's Jim. He does this.
It's the same. It's that guy again. Don't worry about it. But just talk to each other.
Follow-up number two. This, I think, has now become my favorite midday story. Travis Kaufman. Ring any bells?
Travis Kaufman. No, if his name isn't Assman, it's not going to ring bells.
Dave Osman, thank you very much. Travis Kaufman is the jogger from Fort Collins, Colorado, who ended up being attacked by and then killing a mountain lion.
Yeah.
He has had a press conference. He has spoken. And we have grabbed the audio. I should let you know, it's a little harrowing. I mean, this is a man who was attacked by a mountain lion and fought it off and killed it. So you're about to hear the account of a man who was attacked by and then fought off and killed a mountain lion. Here's Travis Kaufman.
I ended up hearing some pine needles rustle, like a stick break. And I turned around and just was pretty bummed out to see a mountain lion chasing after me. So I stopped and threw my hands up in the air and I started shouting. And unfortunately, the shouts didn't deter it. So it just kind of kept running and lunged at me. It was going toward my face, so I threw up my hands to kind of block my face, at which point it grabbed onto my hand and wrist, and from there it started to claw at my face and neck, and that's when kind of my fear response turned into more of a fight response, because I realized how close it was getting to my eyes, and it got a claw on my lip, and I tried to throw it off me at that point, and then we took a little tumble down the south side of the trail, and down there, just kind of had a little wrestling match, at which point I was able to get on top of it, pin its back legs, so I didn't get any soft tissue scratched out in my nether regions. And at that point, I was grabbing around for sticks. I only had my left hand free. My right hand was still locked in its jaws. Tried to get at its neck to see if I could stab it in the neck to get it to release. That wasn't working. The sticks were breaking. So then I picked up a rock that I had seen kind of near us. It was pretty heavy and it was kind of hard to wield. And I tried to give it a few bashes in the back of the head. But fortunately, I just kind of had a tough time swinging it with my arm still locked into the cat's jaws.
Well, sure,
really
tough.
Wasn't working too well at that point. I knew with two pretty good blows to the back of the head that it didn't release, that I was probably going to have to do something a little more drastic. And then I was able to kind of shift my weight and get a foot on its neck. And at that point, I stepped on it, on its neck, with my right foot. And just slowly, after a few minutes, I thought I'd be getting close, and then it'd start thrashing again and had a few more scratches that resulted from those thrashes at that point. And I'd say another couple of minutes later, it finally stopped moving, and then jaws opened, and I was able to kind of scramble back up the hill and get the heck out of Dodge.
Minutes! This guy was in a fight for his life with a mountain lion for minutes!
Damn.
Are you kidding me? Kaufman's 31 years old. He moved to Fort Collins about 5 years ago for a more active outdoor lifestyle. He got it.
Yeah, there you go.
Jeez, I mean, that is insanity. And the guy
is now moving somewhere for a less active indoor lifestyle.
He's moving to Jersey now. I mean, good God, man. So he did the press conference, and it's on CNN, and he still looks like he had been mauled and attacked by a mountain lion.
Because he had.
The guy got worked over. I mean, he killed the mountain lion. Granted, it was a juvenile thing, but that is harrowing.
That's the Midday Midway, brought to you by National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. Visit Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Schaumburg, February 22nd to 24th, the nation's largest upland hunting and conservation expo, focuses on bird dogs, wild game cooking, and hunting heritage. With over 400 vendors and great seminars, Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic has something for you. Visit pheasantfest.org.
So Del Demps is fired as the Pelicans GM. That's all over.
And with extreme prejudice, too.
Oh, yeah, this thing ended. Maybe we'll get through some of the latest Woj reports about one of the largest superstars in the NBA wanting to leave his team, and the guy who stopped him from doing it, he got fired. What's next? Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
I'm happy for all of them. I'm happy for all of them. You know, because to tell you the truth, you know, this whole thing has been a dumpster fire, you know, and it's just hard. You know, for guys, you know, we want guys to be professional and we want them to do this, but it's hard for guys, you know, to go through what they've been through. And to be able to come out and be the team of that quality, I'm happy for all the guys. I just thought that they did a great job.
Alvin Gentry, who by all accounts is still in good standing with Gail Benson, others... not so much.
Now, let me ask you a question. Does the dumpster fire get worse, or are you starting to put out the dumpster fire after you fire your general manager, after he didn't handle the trade deadline the way you'd like, and after he apparently played into a lot of the discomfort Anthony Davis had when he walked out of the building last night?
Wow.
More or less fire in the dumpster now?
I guess it
depends on the perspective you're looking at the dumpster fire from.
Is it burning hotter and maybe the same amount of fire, it's just generating more energy? I don't know.
Here's a couple of tweets from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, obviously the soothsayer and Woj bomber of the NBA. This about 35 minutes ago. New Orleans has parted ways with GM Del Demps. League sources tell Espen. Organization is discussing internal candidates for the interim GM job, including David Booth and Danny Ferry. Pelicans planning to be aggressive in the marketplace to hire a high-level basketball executive. Ownership, here's where it gets fun. Ownership was livid with an injured Anthony Davis leaving the arena during Thursday night's game, sources say. Gail Benson is telling associates she wants an overhaul of Pelicans and a search for a GM to take command of Davis trade talks and the reshaping of the team's future. Ownership and senior management have been pleased with Coach Alvin Gentry and his staff and believe players are largely responding in what's been a tumultuous search. Ownership's plan with the new GM will be continuing to push back on Anthony Davis's preferred trade destinations if they don't make sense for the Pelicans, especially with a full year left on his contract. Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
That got out of hand fast.
Go Bears!
And I guess... I don't know. Help me through this. Maybe I'm missing a step. If you're going to fire Del Demps, who by many accounts, including David Stearns, is a garbage general manager.
How could you have gotten to this deadline with this once-in-a-lifetime player and entrust him to make the decisions?
That's
because
where I don't...
they're bad ownership?
Okay, if that's the answer, perfect. If it's just that's bad ownership and part of the reason that Anthony Davis is frustrated with the organization and with Demps and with not having gotten a winner there and what's he played, one playoff game? I mean, it's that career needs to go somewhere else. Well, he's too good to be stuck in a situation that dumpster fiery.
Del Demps was on a tier. If you want to think of like, okay, where is, what was, how is, well, was he considered around the league? He was Ernie Grunfeld and Gar Foreman level of, why is the, those three are the, how do they still have a job?
Ownership.
Yes. Because ownership is the biggest advantage in sports, especially basketball.
Because of what ownership,
yeah.
The standard to which they're held based on what they want or don't want. The difference is, with the Pelicans, you can't even say, like, look at all the cash they're throwing off. That's not an international brand. That is not its own dinner theater entertainment product.
The Pelicans!
Right? See, with the Bulls, you could say that whatever is going on with the basketball, you've had a largely independent business business, an entertainment business that was occurring. The Pelicans cannot say that.
But how do you not see, even if it is bad ownership, you've got to be so tuned out of what's going on in your own building to not anticipate an issue like this happening. I mean, because if you're talking with Dell leading up to the trade deadline, and the conversation is, well, what happens when we don't trade him, Dell? Because obviously the Pelican strategy was to throw out to the public as many Lakers offers as they could, so to make sure that the offer they took, if it got up there, was the highest one out there, you know? So that it was perceived that the Pelicans took the best offer on the table. Why do we know that? Well, because the Pelicans have been leaking every deal up to that point. They were never going to deal him. All they wanted to do was cause unrest with Magic Johnson and the Lakers and the rest of LeBron's team as he was sitting seven seats away on the bench, right?
They were just trying to sow discord and troll the Lakers.
So your next question, if you're Gail Benson or ownership, if you're tuned in at all, to Dell Demps needs to be, okay, what happens once we don't trade him? Your answers are, well, we sit him.
And get fined $100,000 for every game he sits.
Well, I don't want to pay that $2.4 million left, Dell. So what's your next option? Well, we'll play him and hope he doesn't get hurt, even though he might. And if he doesn't want to play, he'll just be, you know, kind of a sad sack walking around the building and really kind of be a drain on everybody's MO and really affect his trade value later on, perhaps. Okay, well, I don't want that either. So how do you, if those are the options that your GM has given you, which from all accounts, it seems that those were the options left to Dell Demps and the rest of the Pelicans, how do you move forward with that general manager and that plan? I mean, do you just have to accept that you were that hamstrung by the fact that the Celtics couldn't make a move for AD because of the contract status of Kyrie Irving?
And you think that at some point the market, it would have to be worth your time, worth the aggravation. Maybe you make up the $2.4 million on the back end of value if, in fact, you had some sort of guarantee that the Celtics could do this. But when Kyrie threw in the wrench that he threw in into the machinery,
yeah,
and it destabilized anything Boston felt it could do, again, reminding everyone the players are in charge and not the general managers necessarily, that then there's nothing they could count on at that point to bring back value. Obviously, in hindsight, you could say when the Lakers were going to give you everything, you should have just taken it and been done with it, and then you say we pressed reset and here we are.
Maybe, but
I don't think she's mad that they didn't trade him. I think she's mad at maybe how he handled the negotiation, just not being a professional with the Lakers. Sure, you want to extract as much value, but then to just be an outright jerk, as has been reported in many places, not returning phone calls or any phone calls you answer being less than 5 minutes, just being an outright jerk to them, and then Anthony Davis leaving the building. I think that more than not trading him, because when they were playing him, they were limiting his minutes. He wasn't playing fourth quarters, pretty much. He was playing 24 minutes a game. So I think it's more how it's all played out in that regard as opposed to physically not trading him yet. And it's been reported since the Kyrie thing that the Celtics aren't worried. If they trade for Davis, they feel like Kyrie is there, and they're very confident of that. So they're almost viewing a Davis trade as trading for Davis and Kyrie.
I mean, I get that. I mean, Rick, you're right. That's how the blood boiled over for Gail Benson eventually once she fired Dell Demps this morning. But how do you, if you have Anthony Davis, don't you have to enter this season sniffing around and making sure that he's feels like he wants to stay at all? Like, this shouldn't have, they should have never let this boil up. Ownerships in the NBA can't let this stuff bubble up because the players have so much power in that league, because they're able to set their own destinations more than anywhere else. It's your job as an owner or as a GM, I guess, as the hand of the owner, to be as attuned to all this stuff as you possibly can be.
But the Pelicans won a playoff series last year. They came into this season, and they started the season when everybody was healthy, really good. Remember, it was the Clippers and the Pelicans on top of the West for the first month and a half.
Yeah, it's like
they were
weeks.
Really good before everybody started getting hurt.
Yeah, the other thing,
that's the problem with their roster, though, is outside of their starters, they don't have anything else. So one guy's got hurt. They went down the tubes real fast. That's when Anthony Davis, he may have been planning to leave anyway.
I think he was.
Yeah, but if they had gone to the playoffs again, won another series or two, and then you're offered that much more money, do you stay for even if it's a shorter term version of that? Maybe he does. All the reporting's been that he was genuinely still keeping the door open to staying with the Pelicans at the beginning of the year and as they were playing well. It was once everything went into the Elvin Gentry dumpster fire, that's when things changed.
That's not really my concern right now. My concern as a Bulls fan is that complete instability of another franchise just means that the talent pool, if in fact the Bulls wanted to do something, and all these fantasies that we've been playing out, these different scenarios, that let's say the Bulls wanted to get Sam Hinkie or David Griffin or the assistant from Boston that name keeps coming up. Now you're going to, if you have a new staff that gets hired, if you're going to have somebody come in and take over the Pelicans,
yeah,
and then say, look, I'm getting this scout and this executive and this computer guy and this analyst and this, all it does is shrink the talent pool a little bit when the Bulls will be late to the party again.
I think the one thing that lessens my worry to that end
ownership matters.
Is the right fact ownership does matter. The one thing that lessens my worry to that end is that that's the ownership doing it, the same one that held Dell Demps for as long as they did, and that whatever front office goes into that New Orleans situation, their marching orders are going to have to be, first and foremost, trade Anthony Davis. So I don't know. Maybe you could get the cream of the crop to go in there with that maxim at the top of their list with, hey, welcome to the Pelicans. All of this is yours. You get to run this however you want after you trade one of the best five players in the NBA. I don't know that that's – I mean, is that as alluring? Is that as attractive an offer as other front offices might be after they clean out their stuff at the end of the year?
No.
I don't think it's the best one. You could make an argument, though. I mean, it's still one of, you know, it's one NBA franchise. There's only so many of them.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season for matchups with Minnesota and Ohio State. Purchase tickets now at nusports.com. We still are thinking that it's possible that Addison Russell could be speaking today, and promise you that if he does, no matter what we're doing, we are going to break in and make sure that we carry that for you live as best we can. At noon, we are going to play off of Andrew Zimmern's appearance today, the Bizarre Foods host, and do a little Bizarre Foods segment of our own at noon, where you're going to tell us your stories, your experiences of the strangest, most exotic things that you have consumed.
Coming up in a few, though, it's Talk More Hockey, Talk Less Hockey. NBC Sports Chicago Blackhawks analyst Charlie Romolotis is going to join us just after this. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
We and the Devils got a great start tonight. They were caught and passed by the Blackhawks, and the Hawks have now gone 8-1 in their last nine starts. And out of the last 23 games they've played, only six times have they not gotten at least a point. And Cam Ward, a major part of the story this evening.
We responded really well in the second period with the type of effort that we needed to give ourselves a chance. I thought we were really good. We won the game in the second. Would have liked us to keep pushing in the third. Thought we were fine, but just spent a little bit more time than we like on our end, and obviously we killed a couple penalties, and they got a few chances, but liked our second period.
Well, now I'm fired up. Jeremy Colliton. Cam Ward channeling his inner Bryce Harper with his hat flying off a couple of times last night, but the Hawks are hot. They're fun to watch. There's a lot of good things going on. Here to talk about is the Hawks beat writer from NBC Sports Chicago. He is Charlie Rumeliotis. He is on Twitter at @CRumeliotis, and he is on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Charlie, how are you?
How's it going? You nailed my last name, by the way.
I think it's my job, isn't it?
It's been an entire day's of work. Don't let him.
It's usually a nightmare for radio hosts, but grade A by you guys.
We've spent all morning practicing. Don't let him tell you that he just knocked it out of the park on the first try. Charlie, I'm wondering, we were just talking about Anthony Davis and the Pelicans and ownership and how they just fired their general manager and all this kind of stuff. And we were speculating that if the Pelicans had stayed on their run and made a playoff series and gotten themselves there, that it alters the fate of the franchise. I wonder if you think the Blackhawks are close to doing something similar, but the other way, this run, a push into the playoffs, could alter the face of the franchise in terms of what you're doing at the deadline and which direction you think you need to do, rebuild or reload.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult because The trade deadline is about a week away now, and if the Hawks somehow rattle off three or four more wins here and they sneak into that, if they find themselves sitting in the second wild card spot as the deadline, like on trade deadline day, like it's going to be very difficult for, you know, management to kind of sell off these parts. And maybe they probably went into this trade deadline thinking they were going to be sellers, and now they're kind of reconsidering. I still think it alters the big picture plan. I don't think they were ever going to be sellers in the sense that they were going to trade a big piece away. I think they've always been looking to do hockey trades, but it'll be interesting to see if they decide to trade off some of their depth players that maybe they were going to be looking forward to doing.
Jonathan Toews had another goal, and he continues this resurgent season. Why does he look physically? He's playing stronger. And I know he's always been sort of been a max effort to the very end of his shift kind of player, but it just looks to me stronger on his skates. He's playing with a greater leverage on the puck, and it looks rejuvenated. Is he eating meat again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think his off-season regimen is a big reason why. I think he changed up what his diet was and changed up his training methods. Last year, it really did look like he was a little bit weak on the puck, and he was, you know, he wasn't skating as hard and aggressively as he was in years past. And now he really does look like a different player, where he's faster, but he's also still strong on the puck. And I think a big reason for that is, I know a lot of the underlying analytics last year said that he was going to have a bounce back season, but maybe not to the degree of a career year offensively. And I talked to him earlier a couple weeks ago about his resurgence, and he basically said, I've been watching a lot of Kaner, a lot of Patrick Kane, and what he's been doing. He's been holding onto the puck in the offensive zone, and he isn't quick to give it up to forwards. So I think that's a big reason why as well. He's kind of learning off of his teammates.
You mentioned the front office was likely leaning toward making hockey trades this whole time, regardless of their run here the last couple of weeks. What names to you scream hockey trade? Like, which is that, like a Chris Kunitz dump? Is it Artem Anisimov? Is that Duncan Keith that you can get a piece back for and still maintain this momentum and charge into a playoff spot?
I don't think that big. I think there was a lot of speculation earlier in the summer that they were going to go after one of Carolina's defensemen, and Brandon Saad was talked about as a potential guy that if you want to give up a big-time forward to get a big-time defenseman, maybe that's a hockey trade that suits both teams. And we saw it earlier in the year where, you know, you trade a guy like Nick Schmaltz and get a guy like Dylan Strome in return, where it's just like a change of scenery type deal. I think those are the kinds of things that Stan Bowman is constantly looking to do. I mean, he's never closing the phone on any of those types of deals. So I'm not sure we're going to see a bigger piece like Duncan Keith or Brent Seabrook moved, if they're even movable. It's more about just going to be, how can we improve this roster without giving up future assets?
The goaltender position is complicated if and when Corey Crawford returns. Cam Ward has been more than capable in the role for which he was signed, and it does appear occasionally spectacular even for a veteran player. Colin Delia has at least established that he is an NHL-level goaltender at the very least, but he would have to be the odd man out when Crawford returns, correct? Because they're not going to carry three.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because they obviously have the up to the trade deadline to really figure it out. And if there's even a market for Cam Ward to, you know, he's got a no movement clause, so he ultimately controls where he decides to go. But if this is his last year and he kind of sees the writing on the wall that he's the third goaltender and he might be squeezing Colin Dealey out of the mix, like he might waive it to go somewhere where a team that's looking for a backup goaltender just to get them to the stretch run, you know, not exactly to the point. You don't exactly acquire a goaltender at the trade deadline because you want to solidify your backup position in the playoffs. You do it because you want to take the load off of your starting goalie from now until the end of the regular season. So I think right now, Colin Delia is probably the odd man out, but I'm fairly confident that they're going to find a way to either, you know, trade Cam Ward or they're going to have to figure out something, because there's no way you can send Delia back to Rockford with the way he's playing.
Charlie Rumeliotis, the Hawks beat writer for NBC Sportsnet, joining us here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Charlie, what do you think of Connor Murphy? Sell me on him, I guess.
It depends how you look at him. Are you looking at him as a top four defenseman, or are you looking at him as, you know, a serviceable guy? I think he's a perfect third pairing defenseman. I think he's really improved his game from last year. And talking to some players last year about how Connor Murphy's game didn't exactly translate to the Blackhawks' style of play, where he would always go for that open ice hit in the neutral zone, where now you're looking at him, he's being aggressive at the blue line and holding the blue line on his own. So I think he's a serviceable, absolutely a solid third-pairing defenseman, but he's getting paid like a potential top-four defenseman, so I'm not sure. That's another interesting situation, because you have all these right-handed shot defensemen coming up in the organization, so you have to make room. And Brent Seabrook isn't necessarily going anywhere, so that's two right-handed shots that you're going to have to figure out how to you know, kind of place them into the top six going forward.
We saw it again from Brandon Saad, one of those moments where you go, ooh, hoo, hoo, yes, more of that. And I just – sometimes he looks like an absolute world beater, and then sometimes you forget he's on the ice. And I know he's talked about it, and everybody's tried to unlock this. Are we any closer to figuring out how you can get the star that's in there out of him?
I'm really not sure what to make of it, because when he was on the first line with Jonathan Toews, and you know, they were, you know, I felt like they were solid, but they just weren't getting scoring chances, and Brandon Saad tends to, you know, his goals tend to come in streaks, so he'll go on a run right now. Like, I think he has six or seven goals in his last 9 or 10 games, and then he'll go on a stretch where he's not scoring. He has like one goal in 10 games or something like that, but he's been effective, very effective in a third line role, playing with Anisimov and Dylan Sakura as of late. I just think it's hard for him to play that kind of way on a consistent basis for 82 games, because he's exerting so much energy back checking and playing on the PK. So when his offensive numbers come, it's kind of like a bonus.
What's fair to expect of Sakura going forward here now that he's back up?
Yeah, I think an effective third line player. I don't really see him as a top six forward. I think he's more of a perimeter player. I think he's a guy that can create offense, but he's not getting the power play opportunities that he's been getting in Rockford, where he's been playing in all situations. So it's difficult for him to kind of, you know, I asked Jeremy Colleton this a couple of days ago about how difficult it is for a guy like Sakura, who is playing all these minutes in Rockford, and then he comes to Chicago and he's not getting power play time, and he's playing on the third line, and he's only getting about 8 or 9 minutes a night. How can he be effective? But I think ideally on a good team, if you got a four-line rotation, Sakura is an effective third liner.
What is true and what is not true about Hawks veterans, I know particularly Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, who may or may not have been approached about waiving their no-movement clauses? What do you know that's real?
Well, I think at some point, if a conversation did not happen, it's going to happen about where these veterans, where they want to be within this organization going forward. Do they want to be part of this long-term transition where they're retooling on the fly here, or do they want to go somewhere else and try to win another cup elsewhere? My sense is they don't want to go anywhere. They want to stay in Chicago. I think the frustrating part about for them is they badly want to win here in Chicago, and they love living in Chicago. They love their family being in Chicago, and they want to win as Blackhawks. They don't want to necessarily pick up their family and move to a different town or a different country to win another Stanley Cup, add a fourth Stanley Cup to their resume, something they already have. So if a conversation, I don't think it's going to be a formal conversation where they sit the players down and say, okay, what do you want? I think it's just going to be nonchalant, like, hey, what do you want to do? And if the conversation hasn't happened yet, I think it already is, but or it's going to happen, but I don't think it's a conversation that is going to be something where they're going to be forced to waive their no movement clause. It's just going to be grasping at what their ideas are.
Charlie, it's great stuff. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
Charlie Roumeliotis, NBC Sports Chicago Blackhawks beat writer. Top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season for matchups with Minnesota and Ohio State. Purchase tickets now at nusports.com. All right, let's do this. We had Andrew Zimmern on earlier today. He was delightful.
He was.
And his whole deal, his brand is flying all over the planet and eating strange, exotic, and things that may or may not be enjoyed. Now, we want to find out your similar stories.
All the weird stuff you've eaten.
All the weird stuff. It might be good. It might be bad. It might have been on a plate. It might have been something you found underneath a floor mat. It might have been on a bet.
Somebody might have had to tell you about it later.
But that's what we're asking. We want to do a little strange culinary adventure bit here. 312-644-6767. Come join the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. Oh, oh.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.